You're listening to the Salon Owners Collective podcast, where each week we share stories and expertise from business owners like you, plus experts, influencers, and Larissa's actionable steps that will transform your business and your life. And now your host, Larissa McLemon.
Hi, how are you? Late in 2016, I interviewed Keisha, who was about to launch her vision of a mobile salon, Chop Chop. She's had a very interesting journey that she's going to share with us on how she stepped out in faith, listened to the clues around her, and pivoted her business model to meet the market. In this episode, she shares her lessons learned. Lots of gold in here. I know you're going to enjoy it. Let's jump into our chat with Keisha. Keisha, welcome to the Salon Owners Collective podcast. I really appreciate having you back.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to speak to you again.
So we had you on the show in December of 2016, and at that time you were about, or you were in the early stage of launching your business. And we were talking to you about your vision and the things that were going on for you at that time before you launched your Chop Chop brand. And now you have a thriving business. And so I'm really, really keen for you to share with us, you know, in that short space of time, where your business is at now, what you are doing with the Chop Chop brand. And I know you're going to share with us some of the lessons you've learned along the way in launching a new business. So tell us a little bit about Chop Chop and where it is today.
Yeah, so Chop Chop Mobile Salon and Barber is basically a mobile grooming and beauty service. So we have two main channels or way that we deliver our services, one being our pop-up salon. And I think the last time we spoke, I had already taken off with the pop-up salon. And that's just where we go into homes, facilities, event venues, hotels, and we service brides and business professionals and groups that are celebrating events. And so with that, I was still in the process of really trying to raise money for our mobile salon trailer. And I hadn't gotten the funding that I needed in order to purchase the trailer at that time, because it's basically a tricked out trailer with four different stations inside the trailer, a bathroom, and just all the amenities that you would find inside of a traditional salon inside the salon trailer. So that's kind of where we left off. And so much has happened since then. I had an investor, and the investment fell through, and he wasn't able to provide the funding for our business. So I kind of had one of those moments where I was just like, what am I going to do? Should I even do this anymore? How the heck am I going to raise, you know, almost $100,000? And I ended up just entering into a business plan competition for Miller Lite. Miller Lite, every year they do this pitch competition. It's called Tap the Future. And I, you know, was online and I found it, and I was sitting at home and I'm like, why not? I know it's going to go in a black hole. No one's ever going to see it. I'm not going to hear from them, but I'm desperate. I'm desperate. And this is like my last, you know, alternative. So I had a very robust business plan. I think we talked about this in our last conversation. And I really felt like a 72-page business plan needs to be used and utilized. So I took, you know, the content from the business plan, plugged it into the questions they asked for the Miller Lite competition. And lo and behold, like 3 months later, I get an email while I'm sitting at my desk at work, because I'm still working full time. And it was like, congratulations, you're a semifinalist in the Miller Lite Tap the Future competition. And I literally just started crying at my desk, because I was in awe. And the best thing about it is, as a semifinalist, you automatically get $1,000. So as I was struggling, so $1,000 to me was like golden and it was guaranteed. But then also I had the chance to win $20,000, pitching, you know, in a regional competition, against six other businesses. And I would be able to pitch in front of Damon John, from ABC's Shark Tank. So wow. I was just like amazed. And that wasn't even it. The grand prize for the competition was $200,000. So that would have exceeded what I needed, you know, to get this business really off the ground. So I ended up winning the semifinals. So I pitched in front of Damon John on like live in front of like 300 people. And I actually won the semifinals in the Midwest region. So that wow. $20,000 was enough. Yeah. For me to, actually, I had already decided to just go ahead and go with the trailer. I just followed my gut and my instinct, and I ended up taking about $20,000 from my profit sharing in order to pay the down payment for my trailer. But the thing was, I had no idea how I was going to pay the balance. So I kind of stepped out on faith and just I forced myself to come up with an option. That was another reason why I did the competition, because I'm like, I need some money to pay the balance off on this trailer. So anyway, that $20,000 allowed me to pay the balance of the trailer. So yeah.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. It was a whirlwind. I didn't win the finals for the $200,000, but, you know, just the experience alone gave me, I had to, you know, go back over my business plan, because I had to submit my actual business plan to like 12 judges. And these judges were like the vice president of BMO Harris Bank. You know, they were business people in a lot of large, you know, corporate scale businesses. So I faced a lot of critique and advice, and it just made me do a really thorough evaluation of my business. So it was very, very valuable for me.
Absolutely. I think entering a competition at any point around your business is just the exercise itself is valuable, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Apart from the fact that you already had a 75-page business plan already well thought out and well organized.
Yes. But it made me go back and kind of readdress, you know, some spots where I may have needed to change how I looked at the business. But yeah, definitely great exercise.
Look, I think the other thing too that, you know, is a standout is that, you know, you go into that seeking and taking on board the advice, because I think why it makes good TV, things like Shark Tank, is that, you know, people often reject or take things really personally when people give advice and critique and walk away feeling more righteous, but actually have added no value to the experience. So, you know, I think it's the winning few that are open-minded, mm-hmm. take on advice and make it a valuable experience. So good for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about what does the business look like today?
Yeah, so, you know, it's really interesting because I think that it's really important to have a vision of what you want your business to look like, but at the same time, be very cognizant of what the market wants and what potential customers want. Mm-hmm. I really was focused on, you know, using the trailer to go to corporations that have private lots. Like we have, you know, here in Illinois, where I live, you have the Walgreens Corporation, you have Abbott, you have, you know, CDW, you have all these large companies that have these big lots on their corporate campus. And I wanted to take the trailer there and then service the employees and have them come down before and after work and during their lunch break to get these, you know, hair, makeup, nail services done. Yeah. But it's very difficult to first of all, find out who's a contact at the company who you need to talk to. And then how do you spin it so that it is a benefit to a corporation for them to pay so much money? You know, because the employees are all about it, but it's how do you spin it in order to make it something, an initiative that the company wants to focus on? And a lot of companies right now, you know, they're downsizing, you know, due to the economy, you know, they may or may not be investing so much in their employees. So you really have to then scale it down and find the companies that are very employee centric, you know, the ones that are going out of their way to do things to make their employees more engaged. And so trying to go through all the different companies and figure this out is very difficult. So what I realized is, although they're still very much a target, the corporations, it's just not as easy to get in there and just start, get a contract with them. So in the meantime, the bridal industry was an industry that I was interested in, but it wasn't my main focus. But I noticed that there were so many brides that found value in having a salon trailer, you know, pull up to their hotel room, and then the bride and her 4 to 6 bridesmaids could all hop on and they can get their services done at the same time. It became like a pre-party or pre-bash or almost an extension of the bachelorette party, you know, before the wedding. And then the bridesmaids didn't have to worry about going to, you know, their individual salons to get their hair done. Now everybody had the same hairstylist. They send me the pictures ahead of time. And then we already have like project managed the whole, you know, experience before they step onto the salon trailer. So the wedding industry has actually been very lucrative for me. Up until this point. And then again, listening to who the customer is, my website, I was getting these inquiries about activations and brand activations and experiential marketing. And I didn't even know what this was. And so I had a marketing agency submit an inquiry asking if we would create a pop-up salon experience at the Adidas National Windy City Volleyball Tournament here in Chicago. And I didn't know what they were talking about. I didn't even know what it entailed, but of course, I'm like, Adidas, sure. Like, you know, so I hop on the phone with the guy from the marketing agency, and basically they wanted us to be in a VIP booth and be doing the hair for the volleyball players before they stepped on the volleyball court. Because, of course, you know, they're wearing these ponytails and they're flying around everywhere. They're jumping around and diving for, you know, the balls. But they have to make sure that their hair is out of their face. So we actually, we got contracted by Adidas, and we didn't represent Chop Chop. We actually wore Adidas, you know, shirts and shoes and everything, and we acted on behalf of them. But that just gave me, I was just like, wow, I didn't know this was a thing. Yes. So actually now that's my main target, because now we work with Lincoln Motors Company, and now we're in the talks with the Bears to do their training camp, and just different brands that want to create an experience that helps connect the brand to the consumer, and using the trailer as like an exhibition trailer. They also have the option to now customize the inside or the outside. We can wrap it with their branding and just do all kinds of cool stuff to help, you know, bring some loyalty and engagement with the brand and their customers. So that's actually, and that's the most lucrative, I think, out of the different target audiences. So I've actually shifted my business to focus there.
Keisha, that's so unexpected, that twist, that where you have found yourself. I love it.
Yeah. I definitely think, you know, again, we set out with a vision, but you have to be flexible and listen to the demands of, you know, the industry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's really awesome. And isn't that interesting too, that big brands are investing so heavily in the experience in relation to their own brand experience? I think that's really interesting.
Oh, yeah. I was just reading an article actually yesterday, and they said by 2020, this experiential marketing and brand activations, that segment or that piece of business is worth like $600 billion. Like, it's ridiculous how much brands are spending to really engage with the customer.
Yeah. That's actually exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, that's great. And so do you actually go to any of the corporate brands and have you struck up a couple of deals there, or have you kind of moved past that now and going straight to the experiential brands?
You know, I've been so focused on the experiential piece of it. I still send out proposals and, inquiries, and I actually use LinkedIn as a way to show companies the value. So I post a lot of content around employee wellness and wellness programs. So what I've learned is that in order to really have a company consider us, there's a certain language that you have to use. And again, this comes with just, time and learning the process. But I've spun it now as, hey, we want to be a part of your wellness program, because wellness program is everything from your healthcare benefits to massages to, just different offerings that you can provide your employees to help reduce stress and improve productivity and engagement and things of that nature. So I'm still sending out proposals and having conversations, but it's just a slower process.
Okay. Very, very, very interesting. Now, you have a bit of a background in marketing and advertising and have been quite organized and planned around that. Tell us a little bit about what you've learned in that space.
Yeah, so currently I still work for a Fortune 500 company, and I'm a marketing manager for their private label brands. And I've been able to learn a lot through, my day-to-day responsibilities. But it is a little bit different when you're managing your own business with limited funds, right? Mm. So I can't make as many mistakes with my own personal money because I don't have as much money, right? So what I am doing is I'm allowing myself to fail fast and just evaluate as I go. So for example, perfect example is, The Knot, right? The Knot is a huge wedding website. I made the decision at the end of last year, when I was trying to figure out how I wanted to spend my advertising and marketing dollars in 2017, I had decided I wanted to go on The Knot because I was getting a lot of wedding business. And so I, went and I got like the premier service package, and it cost me like $165 or so a month. And what I realized is, okay, wait a minute. I just put myself amidst a lot of competition. Okay. Because now I have brides that are comparing me against thousands of other hair vendors on the site. But I also started to look at how much money I've spent per month versus how many leads I'm getting, how much traffic I'm getting on my page. And I realized up until last month, I had spent like $907, but I had closed no leads. Okay. And so I signed a contract, and I have to do it for a year. I have to advertise with them for a year. But one thing that I've taken away from that is not to, especially when it comes to marketing, don't lock yourself in to something that you don't know whether or not it's going to work. Because on the other end, word of mouth, I've had about 4 weddings just from word of mouth and referrals, and closed all of those. And then I've yielded over $6,000 on those 4 weddings. So it's like the return on investment is very obvious, And so the thing though is to be honest with yourself and say, hey, I made a bad call, or that wasn't the best channel for my business, but how do I rectify that, and what change do I make going forward to ensure that I don't, make the same mistake? So I think it's important to really, especially when it comes to marketing, and there's so many things that you can do, these Facebook ads and Instagram ads, and, I did a lot of trade shows. Oh my gosh, I did so many trade shows last year. And I mean, I wasn't getting any callbacks from people that attended those trade shows, and I was spending $200, $300 for each trade show. and not yielding any results. And so this year I made sure, I told myself, I'm not doing any more trade shows because it doesn't work, you know? So I think it's really important to try different things, but also evaluate within, you know, 30 to 60 days, what is the return on investment for those different marketing tactics that you use, and be honest with yourself and say, if it's not working, try something else.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because I think we can sometimes go, oh, well, it's good brand exposure, but brand exposure doesn't, sure, there's some value in the long term, but it doesn't, like you say, get the bookings.
Exactly.
So what do you
know what, when you're,
I'll let you finish.
I was just going to say, when you're a startup, you have so many friends and family members and like acquaintances who will say, hey, do you want to work my event, or do you want to do my event? You know, it'll be great exposure. And at first, you know, in the beginning, I was like, yeah, I should definitely take advantage of every little thing. And then you realize, wait a minute, this isn't even my audience. Like, why am I doing this event? These aren't even the people that are going to buy from me, you know? So you start to really understand what you should do and what you shouldn't do.
So how has it changed your, you know, what you're choosing to engage in for the remainder of 2017? Not that there's much of it left, but what's working for you now?
I think, again, now that I feel like I have really listened to the market, and I understand where people see value in what I bring, because that's the other thing, is like, you can try to force your value onto somebody else, but you really have to wait to see who finds value in what you offer. And I feel like right now I know exactly who finds that value, and it's the brides, the wedding parties, and it is the experiential marketing, the brands. Mm-hmm. So I really now see myself as more B2B, because I think that from a B2C standpoint, outside of the bridal industry, I don't really see much there, especially from a consistency standpoint. So for me, what I've done is I actually contracted a PR consultant, and she already has a lot of relationships with brands, because that's all she does. And so I made the move to actually hire a consultant to make those connections and then sell, you know, chop chop to those brands. And she's out there getting meetings with big brands. She's, having those discussions. She's, you know, creating the proposals and basically pitching on my behalf, which has made it very easy for me, because, you know, I'm still a solopreneur. I pretty much do everything myself. Yeah. So I needed a way to delegate some of, you know, those things. And then also, she can do it a lot faster than I can, because she already has those relationships.
Look, those relationships become vitally important, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I've learned, don't recreate the wheel. You know, there are people out there who know how to do certain things, and I should not feel like I have to do every single thing or have my hand in every single aspect, because the reality is, at some point, I want to be able to just delegate and do more of the strategic stuff and not so much of the being in the weeds. And I really had to, you know, do some soul searching to say, you can't, you know, have control over every single thing. Like, you got to let other people help you.
And also, you know, I really like that you've brought that up, because, you know, I think when we're self-employed and we're busy doing, like you said, doing all the things, we really need to stick to the things that we're good at and not bang our head against the wall a bit on the things that actually is not our sweet spot and that we're not particularly good at. And those are the things you want to delegate, because actually it allows you also to stay in the things that you enjoy and delegate the things that actually aren't your natural strength, and then they zap us of energy, let alone time. Definitely. Very smart.
Definitely.
I'm all about the delegate.
Yes. And, you know, it's okay to work, you know, obviously don't work hard, work smart. Yeah. And I'm to the point where I definitely know what needs to be done. So I have to be okay with, you know, deciding what, you know, who my resources can be to get those things done. So.
For sure. Okay. You mentioned to me before when we were chatting prior to this podcast about failing fast. Can we dig into that a little bit? Like, what does that really mean for you? What does, you know, how does that play out in your life?
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing is, I think I mentioned before that there was competition, and actually there was a company that had started a mobile salon, like right in the same kind of neighborhood as me. And that was also one of those points where I'm like, do I keep going? Do I not? Because they had their salon trailer before I did. And I had found out that they went to the same Chamber of Commerce meeting that I typically go to, and they were promoting their business. And the way I found out they were there is someone who had seen me on a regular basis had reached out and said, hey, are you a part of this company? Because I know you're doing the same thing. And I was like, what? No. Who? Where? When? What? And, you know, I was so bummed. And I remember just like boo-hooing. I mean, I was so bummed because I didn't have the trailer yet, but I was kind of getting people ready for it, you know, and trying to make them understand the concept. And so one thing that was very different between my business and their business was that they were focused only on blowouts and, you know, blowouts for women for the most part. But I was very much interested in being multicultural and also having a unisex salon, because I wanted to make sure when we pop up, we're inclusive, you know, we're not saying, no, we can't take you or, you know. So anyways, what I did and what I shouldn't have done is I compared my business to theirs once I got the trailer. So I'm going on their website and I see this is the location that they're at. They're, you know, they're in the city and they're doing pop-ups here and there. And so I felt like, okay, I need to do pop-ups in the city and I need to be at the same, you know, type of locations. And I was like having this internal battle. They had no idea, but it's just me and kind of looking at what they're doing, because from the outside, they looked very successful. They looked like they were at a point where I wanted to be. So what happened was I did a couple pop-ups. I did one pop-up particularly in the city, and it was at a museum. It was at the DuSable Museum. And I remember being so excited because they had a parking lot. We took the trailer, we parked there. I hired 4 contractors, hairstylists, freelance artists to come so that each of our chairs were full. So we looked like, you know, we looked legit. I had the driver there. I had 2 nail techs, and, you know, we were supposed to have a lot of traffic and a lot of foot traffic there. So I paid out probably a little over $1,000 for everyone to be there, for all the freelance artists and the driver and the nail tech. And although we were at a festival and we were at a museum and it was hot outside and it was just like the perfect situation where you would think, yes, people would stop by and get haircuts. We literally had 3 people stop by the entire day. And I was so like emotionally crushed because I was just like, I mean, I got up super early in the morning to go get the trailer, to drag it all the way and the traffic to the city, and didn't come anywhere close to covering the expenses, you know, for that day. And I lost probably about $1,500 in one day. And I just, I was so bummed. But what I realized is I was trying to do something that was not really what I had planned and set out to do as a strategy for my business. And I was looking at the competition and I was trying to be like them because I thought that that was working for them.
Yeah.
And what I realized after that was I'm never going to do that again. That was never my model to just pop up at different places. My model was to have a contract in place and get paid ahead of time and service events, you know? And so, I learned from that, and I didn't say, you know, oh, maybe that situation wasn't the best. Let me do it again. I said, no, stick to what you know. And I actually found out maybe 2 months ago that same company is now out of business. Uh-huh. And so it was very eye-opening to me that you just got to stick to your guns and do what you believe is right for your business and not compare yourself to your competition.
I love that story. I truly do. And I heard a really great saying. I've heard it several times. Don't compare someone else's paint job to your business under the hood. You know, if you think of a car, you look at the paint job and it's beautiful and it's glossy. And then you run over to your own car and you open up the hood and you go, oh, look at mine. You know, my machine is not as good as theirs and my paint job's not as good. It's like you don't know what's underneath the hood of that business. You can only see the paint job. So I think that's similar, right?
You just gave me chills. Yes, that's a great thing.
Yeah. So good for you for figuring it out. And as you said, failing fast. Don't do it again.
Mm-hmm. No, I won't.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, look, you've had so many interesting lessons along the way and much learning I can see along the way. So I take my hat off to you. I think that's really great.
Well done.
So do you have a mantra or a quote or something that, you know, kept you sane all these over this last year in this incredible journey?
Yes, definitely. It is have faith in the middle. Oh. And I'll tell you, I, you know, the beginning of your journey is so exciting. It's exhilarating, you know, because you come up with this idea, everyone around you that has supported you, they tell you how great of an idea it is. You know, you're just excited to try to get it to a point where you've launched. And I even remember, like, I had my launch party in May of this year, and it was so, you know, exciting, like getting the sponsors and getting the goodie bags and inviting all the people and trying to figure out who should be on the list and who shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And then I had a launch party, and then I was like, okay, now what? You know, it's like, now I have to find business. Now I have to make sure that, you know, my business stays running. And what I realized just from May after the launch party up until a couple months ago, I mean, I was having some serious anxiety. I was having doubt because things just weren't going as I had planned. And then I was in the car and listening to the radio, and Steve Harvey on his morning show, he was talking about the same situation where he was, you know, struggling, trying to like get that one show where he was going to blow up. And it's that middle part that you have to stay strong. You have to have faith that what you set out to do, you can do, and that you're capable. And I had a lot of times where I doubted myself and I, you know, would say, who do I think I am? Like, why can I make this happen? Or how am I going to make this happen? Or why would I even believe that I can make this happen? And once I heard that, I guess I'm a crybaby. I started crying because it touched me because I just said, you know, that is so true. Like in the middle, right before you get your big break, that is where you have to have the most faith. And sometimes, you know, I'll go a long time in between gigs, and I get really frustrated, you know, and I just can't understand why, you know, I'm prospecting, I'm sending letters, I'm getting on the phone and I can't close the deal. But then next thing you know, I'll get an inquiry through, you know, our website and someone wants us to, you know, do an activation. And then it's a pretty lucrative activation. And I'm just like, okay, I'm back in the game. So
yeah.
I really think it's important to have faith in the middle, because the middle is the toughest time. It's like, it's the toughest time.
That's one of my favorite sayings, I think, and recognizing mm-hmm. the journey and the constant roller coaster of being running a business and being an entrepreneur, right? And another one that you said was step out in faith, but then you did the work. You know, you stepped out in faith and then you did the work, and then the reward will come, right?
Right.
Amazing.
Definitely. One of my favorite podcasts is How I Built This. It's by Guy Raz. It is amazing because they interview a lot of like Airbnb, you know, owner or Uber or Lyft and, you know, a lot of the big businesses. And the Airbnb one was my favorite because the founder said there's like this point where you have a great concept, but it doesn't fit with the market just yet, or the market is not ready. And so that in between stage is the, what do you call it? The trough of sorrow, because you're just kind of like waiting, you're just waiting. And I feel like I'm there where I know this industry, this, the brand, activations and everything is huge. And I'm here on the other end with what they need, but it's just making that connection, right? So I feel like I'm right there in the middle, and I just have to honestly stay alive. My business just needs to, I'm just trying to stay alive until this connection is actually made.
So. Yeah. And until you reach the tipping point. I don't know if you've read that book, Malcolm Gladwell, I think. He's written a book about exactly that. It's the tipping point. And it's kind of like what comes after the trough of sorrow, I guess. And you just tip over the edge into momentum, I guess, when all the what we might say, he speaks about it much more scientifically, but we might say when all the stars align and you tip over into when it really starts to pull together. So, you know, I think, again, it's just, you know, stepping out in faith and holding the faith through the middle. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, we'll have to have you back on the show when you've tipped into your tipping point and we'll have the next chapter of the saga of the Chop Chop journey. So look, thank you so much for joining us.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Larissa. Thank you.
Now, look,
thank
I know
you
people
very
are
much. Thanks
you,
for having me.
You're very welcome. I know people are going to want to check you out online. So tell us your dub and your socials. Where can people find you?
Sure. We're at chopchopmobile.com. And on all the social media, Instagram, Facebook, we're at chopchopmobile.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you again for joining me. And we'll see you in another year or so.
Yes, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Bye. Well, I just love Keisha's story, and she articulates it so well. She's always been so organized with her business plan, yet having the flexibility enough to evolve, right? So if you need support with your business planning or simply how to go about some of the changes that you need to make in your business, then I encourage you to check out the Salon Owners Collective Hub. Everything you need and nothing that you don't to fast track your business success, so you can have a fully booked out salon, grow and retain a team of rock stars, and earn more while leaving plenty in the tank for you and your loved ones. So go and check it out, www.salonownerscollective.com, and I will see you next week on the podcast.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Tune in each week as we reveal the latest insight and advice on what it takes to make your salon a success today. Subscribe to the Salon Owners Collective podcast on iTunes or visit us online at salonownerscollective.com for answers to your common questions, to follow Larissa, and much more. Thanks for listening. See you next time.